So I'm here with Noah Healy. Hi, Noah. You are the founder of CoreDisc, and you're based in Charlottesville in Virginia. And we're going to talk about commodity markets, which is something that most people actually do not know about. And there's a very simple example is here right before our eyes at the moment with the Ukrainian crisis, which is the price of wheat. So how are these commodity markets working? Who are the main players in there, and how is the whole system working?
Okay. So commodity markets eventually seek to link producers to consumers. But at this point, their primary customer base are actually hedge funds and other internal traders. And so what happens is that there are these websites in which you can register. It's a financial system like a brokerage or a bank. And you go in and make bets on where you think prices are going to be in the future. And if somebody exists that's willing to take the other side of your wager, then the system writes that up, publishes the fact that somebody made this bet, and then a millionth of a second later, they do that all over again with all the people that showed up in sort of that microsecond to make those deals. Each one of those deals has an expiration date on it, and when the dates come due, all the bets that haven't been kind of sold off and liquidated by then finally settle, and some of them actually get delivered. So it's around 97% to 98% of them will settle out, and kind of 2 or 3% of them will deliver.
Okay, so this is what they call futures in your language, isn't it? Something which is bought in the future at a set price. It's a sort of a bet on the price in the future.
Correct. Yes,
it's nothing to do with. It's not like farmers selling on the marketplace of Mumbai, Cairo, or Paris, or London. It's really done on computers everywhere.
It is done on computers. The farmers engage in this in order to work out what value they'll be able to get for their crops, because they need to be fairly assured of their revenue streams, because most of them are operating on credit. So they borrow money, have their season. If everything goes bluey, then they've also have disaster insurance, and the disaster insurance will sort of pay off the loan. If they have kind of a normal season, then they need to make enough money to pay the loan off so they can get the loan for next year and do it all over again. That means that they are more or less forced to take the prices that the market offers to them and lock themselves in to these future situations. That gets us to sort of the first macro level problem we have with the Ukrainian situation, this sudden increase in the price of wheat due to supply restriction combined with inflation doesn't trickle through to the farmers, because they've already got the price locked in. And so it's the people offered them those hedges that actually get this windfall. And what makes that particularly bad is that it seems like we actually have a durable supply contraction as a result of the Ukrainian crisis. Those fields were destroyed. Russia may remain under sanction for some time. And so we would like to see other parts of the world increase production in order to offset that. But because the farmers' incomes have already been locked in, they have no sensitivity to these price increases and have, in fact, not increased production in the face of price increases, because they have not yet seen those price increases.
So I understand, because of the current situation, the price is going up, but farmers are not getting the money. So who's pocketing the benefits here?
Again, those hedge providing middlemen. You made a bet to sell at a particular price in the future. Somebody has the other side of that bet. If the price were to fall between now and the future, that person would take a loss because you'd have this locked in good price. If the price goes up between now and the future, mm-hmm. they make a gain because they've got this locked in mm-hmm. good price. And so with the price going up and large amounts of the produce locked in, the primary beneficiaries of that price increase are actually these sort of hedging middlemen, not the actual edge users.
Okay. So what you're saying is essentially that these middlemen, they're not always making a profit. Sometimes they win and sometimes they lose. And in fact, the whole thing is a bit like a gamble, isn't it?
It's much like a gamble, but also much like a gamble, they have deep enough pockets that they're less like the guy sitting next to you at the crap table and more like the house. They're making a lot of bets that, sure, some of them might not pay off, but on average, those bets will, in fact, pay off. And they have other ways to hedge their downside risks and so on so that they're not absorbing as much of the costs as you might expect them to be. But having the upsides sort of exposed to themselves. We have not yet seen a global meltdown in commodities the way that we saw in the global financial crisis with the mortgage-backed securities, but the sorts of people that are engaging in this behavior have the same kind of position within the financial industry as those too-big-to-fail institutions did. If a general conflagration were to occur that were to wipe out their incomes and start bankrupting them, they are necessary to the operation of the market. Like I said, 98 to 97% of the activity in the market is actually sort of them talking to each other. And so the marketplace as designed would stop existing if something institutional and systematic were to happen to them. And in consequence of that, if they were to en masse start losing money, governments would step in and cover their losses and keep them alive, because their argument would be the same argument that the large banks used in the mortgage-backed securities situation. Hey, sorry we screwed up. Sorry you guys don't have economies anymore. But there won't be marketplaces if we're not in business. So scrape together however much money we've lost plus our bonuses and give it to us free and clear, because you can't exist without marketplaces.
So in essence, what you're saying is this is not a very good system and it's a bit skewed, but at the same time, we really need it.
Yes, I would hasten to point out that the primary difficulties with the system are largely due to the abilities that modern technology has given us. We've had this system for centuries, and it's worked out mostly quite well. Obviously, with you know, some chicanery and other things, but computers offer such a sea change that they've gone from being around 80 to 85% of the marketplace, which is where they were, say, in the 50s and 60s, to being 97 to 98% of the marketplace, which is where we are now. And so their position is much more costly and much more the moral hazard is much greater now as well.
Okay. So we've got these algorithmic systems for stock trading on commodity markets, the way exactly where we have on the stock market where we've had for years. And and this system, as you say, is not very fair. And what can we do to make it more fair to everyone?
Well, my approach is redesign at the market design level to create a system that essentially allows the two sides, the producer and consumer side, to directly negotiate with one another, not on a individual by individual basis, but rather as a joint group basis, and then using the capacities of computer communication to create universal messaging and sort of batch processing to create large groups of buyers and sellers that can be matched off against each other at a common price. And that price can be made less expensive than the sort of emergent common price that the existing model gives, where each person is getting their own bespoke tailored, but unfortunately worse price all in.
But certainly if the price is lower than expected, then certain people are going to lose money in the process, aren't they?
It would be those middlemen whose role in kind of stitching together those groups is being subsumed within the market design itself. So what we're taking is what is currently 98% of the marketplace and moving it down in importance and down in cost at the same time.
Okay, so I understand the need for a change and also for the benefit of the planet and also mostly for the developing countries who will find it very, very hard to cope with this future situation of wheat prices going up. But who actually implements this change? I understand that we can make IT systems fairer. But how do we impose the change? Because obviously these middlemen are certainly don't want to be bypassed, do they?
That's true. However, this change would be imposed essentially voluntarily. So I'm still searching for more, but I'm working with people who are setting up new marketplaces. And the key thing to understand about these middlemen is that while it's easy to see them as a sort of collusive block, because in aggregate, that's how they act, individually, they are competing with one another. And it is the growing numbers of them that leads to this growing share. And so the individual slices of the market the middlemen are earning haven't really increased all that much. The issue is more that there's more of them taking the same size slices in order to increase their section of the pie. What this design offers to the middlemen is for the one of them that decides to step out and actually build one of these systems and set up as an operator, they can sort of cut their own slice out first. So they can take a larger share than anybody has ever taken before and still significantly shrink the total share that all of them are going to take. And then the second phase is that by changing the structure of how we measure and reward success, we can change the rate of return within the marketplace. So I can create a market where the returns are a large multiple, say 10 times what the expected returns used to be, by essentially making it a lot cheaper to invest in the marketplace. And so this combination of sort of the first person who builds it gets a much higher actual income than they've previously had. And then anybody else that comes and participates gets to replicate their old income either with a much smaller amount invested or gets to slice off a tiny share of their investment portfolio to get a much higher rate of return at the very minimum. It becomes very attractive for those people in competition.
Okay, good. So I understand there's this hope for the future, but what are the chances and when could we expect to see a better system in place, both from an IT and a process point of view with regards to community trading?
That's hard to say. I'm dealing with some people who hope to have something launched by the end of this year. Where things go from first launch to continued uptake is an open question. Again, because the system offers the key players better deals, I would expect a certain amount of copycat interest once things get rolling, but that remains to be seen.
Okay, and so you think you're going to implement this system somewhere in the U.S. and then that other countries are going to replicate this?
It could be the U.S. It could be South Africa. It could be Singapore. Those are the three locations where people that I'm working with are currently thinking about building or acting on building.
Okay, good news. So is there, maybe it's not an easy question, but do you think that there is a good chance that we could see this issue with RID prices solved in the near future and avoid a worldwide crisis in terms of famines and whatever?
Unfortunately, I do not see a solution in the near future. What we're seeing with the current situation is to some extent baked in. And like I said, because the farmers are not seeing this pass through, we aren't seeing capacity expansion. So in the event that this capacity loss is actually for real and decides to have some legs, things will be worse next year than they are this year. There's also some essentially unknowable inflationary impact happening in this cost up ramp up. Inflation shows no signs of slowing. The basic forces are still in place. So again, we would expect that to get worse before it gets better. There could be some whiplash effects. You might recall in the early days of COVID, where the price of oil actually went negative because demand had suddenly dropped out and supply was sort of staying at steady, and suddenly there wasn't storage space anymore for these things. Price disruption leads to production disruption. Production disruption can do all kinds of unexpected things. So we could see prices sort of suddenly reverse and then suddenly roar back in sort of the froth of whatever's actually going on in the world.
So there's a lot of uncertainty for the future, but let's keep our fingers crossed that things get better soon. Thank you, Noah.
Thank you.